We'll figure it out. Out of Richmond tonight, orgy at 11.
Yeah. We'll be right back. All right, we are back. This is River City Sounds, episode 57. I am Cole, and today we have with us, once again, Halfcast. Just for whoever's sake, would you mind going around and introducing yourselves? What you do in the band?
I'm Ryan Dickerson. I play the bass.
I'm Jason Tyler. I sing, and I play the guitar.
I'm Alex Moore. I play drums.
All right, it's very good to have you guys back on again. So last time we had you, you guys were episode 5. That was January of 2019, way back when. So as I understand it, you guys are coming up on a 10-year anniversary. Is that correct?
Oh, 10-year anniversary?
It feels that long.
You guys started in 2012, interview
okay,
said.
Yeah.
Your research is correct.
My
impeccable as well.
The three of us, no.
No.
And you're okay, very handsome, too.
Because it did start with just
yes.
you, Jason.
Yeah.
And then they joined on as well.
If you want the recap, the basic version, this project kind of started Halfcast. It was just me just writing some songs in my parents' basement in 2012 before I moved down to Richmond to go to college. Year of the Fox came out, our first album, in 2016. That was just me playing all the instruments with help from some Nova friends. Once I got down here, I met up with Alex and Ryan, and we formed the incarnation of Halfcast that you see today. And that's probably in 2016. So more like a 6 to 7 year anniversary, I guess, for all of us.
Yeah.
Like I said, it feels like 10.
Yeah.
No, it's been great.
Yeah.
So you guys have also done Hourglass sessions as well. Would you like to talk a little bit about that, what you did for that?
Absolutely, Alex.
Yeah, that was incredible. We got to work with the guys from Hourglass. They were, beyond professional and patient, and a few other, words to describe. It was incredible. I'd recommend it for anybody. We were really lucky. We actually won a contest to film a video there, and we were lucky enough to have our video picked, and we were able to kind of have creative control in some ways. We obviously needed all of their help, but. Yeah, it was really cool. We came up with a script. We got some actors and friends of ours to take part. And we did it at the Bird Theater, which we thought was pretty cool. We even had Bob on the Wurlitzer. And he was great. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I had a great time. What about you guys?
So I was just going to ask real quick, because Hourglass sessions, I usually think of them as almost like an audio tree live, kind of like we do this, like a song. But was there kind of an idea for you guys to change it to like almost a music video idea to what you did do?
That was the idea initially. Uh-huh. Yeah, that's how they tend to.
They tend to pretty much let the artist, go as far as they might want to. And so, I think most artists, it does end up just being more of a pretty straightforward live session. But we wanted to go big because we were at the Bird, so we wanted to, costume up a little bit and actually have a little bit of a narrative to it.
How'd you guys get to the Bird? How was the connections there?
Just
money.
Yeah, I just called over there and talked to Matt, who's the one who runs all that, and it turns out, we emailed first, didn't we? We emailed, and then it turns out they do that.
Yeah, you can
rent it by the hour.
Yeah, you can rent it for private screenings, basically, we basically rented it for a night or an afternoon to film there.
About 7 to 8 hours.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And yeah, so you mentioned having the guy play the big organ there.
Yeah,
I read your
Bob.
I read you guys talk a little bit about that in your RVA interview you guys did there. But what was the idea of putting that in the beginning? Because usually that was the song you guys play. They usually have the orgy and Richmond part, right, in the beginning?
Yeah.
Correct.
Yeah. So we've been playing that, like you said, for a very long time. But in the album that we just released, there's a little bit of organ amongst the tracks. Mm-hmm. And, I just played an organ when we recorded it. But, what would be cooler, if we're gonna do the Richmond experience, what would be cooler than having Bob, the guy who's been playing the Wurlitzer at the Bird for many years, play our creation? So we wrote out the music for him to play, and it just came at the beginning and it worked really well. Mm-hmm. It was a better opening than just something that we did, and it was something new and fresh, and it really gave to the experience of us being there at the Bird. It was also we had the 1920s vibe, so having that the curtain open and Bob playing organ, I think was really, it really added to the atmosphere that we were looking for.
Did you guys see any ghosts while you were there?
Other than my pale ass. Yeah.
Honestly, we were rushing around so much, I don't know if we would have even seen one.
Yeah.
Probably. I want to say probably.
Is that the rumor that there are ghosts at the Bird?
It's just that the rumor is that there are ghosts at every 100-year-old theater. It doesn't matter where it is. Exactly. Yeah.
It was an incredible experience. If you have an opportunity to work with Hourglass,
Tyler and Dylan,
and the people at the Bird, it was great.
Yeah. Smooth sailing.
Yeah. Much thanks to Bob and Matt for making that happen at Hourglass. Tyler and Dylan were the people, the sound engineer and the videographer. They both are at Hourglass. Highly recommend anyone who's worth their salt in the music industry to work with them. Mm. The whole deal is they'll do it for free. You have to find the location, but if they like you, they'll do the session for free. Mm. They're making moves. Like, I'm surprised they're not bigger than they already are. That's just Hollywood quality. It's just incredible.
And I don't know that they do everything for free. I doubt that they do everything for free. Not just to clarify, full disclosure, we won a contest. That's the only reason it was free for us.
Yeah.
You guys played, if not the last, one of the last Strange Matter shows. Is that correct?
We were part of the closing series, yeah. So I think we were like second week from the end.
Okay, so there's a long-going conversation we've had, and I want to know maybe from you guys who have been one of the last ones to play there, what do you think is the next Strange Matter? Even if it's not a venue, maybe it's a house show or something. Do you know where that is moving?
You're going to say the same thing, weren't you?
I'm not going to. You go for it.
Well,
go ahead.
Sorry, my personal opinion is that, you know, every venue has its own character, so I don't really think, pardon me, I don't think that there ever will be another Strange Matter, personally. Mm.
I agree with that. I think each venue has its own characteristics. I'm not looking for the next Strange Matter. Hopefully, if that place, you know, Strange Matter becomes something else, like it was Twisters to begin with, correct, or something like that. And, you know, if it becomes something else, I hope it can be great in its own way. I don't need it to be the next Strange Matter. I mean, obviously, we miss Strange Matter a lot. We played there a lot. It was great. So the atmosphere was wonderful. People showed up. But, you know, I think we enjoy playing the other places for their own characteristics. Yeah. But, I mean, there's a lot of other good places. I don't know if you wanted to add to that.
I mean, there's the one I'll say, because probably everyone, I know everyone sitting here and everyone listening has probably played at the Camel, and they've done a lot for bands throughout the pandemic. They were like smart about it, but they still wanted to support local artists, which I think everyone could get behind. They never have an empty slot. It's just like it's really cool what they're doing. So they've definitely picked up some of that, and it's not even that far away. I mean, it's right down the road. They've picked up some of that, you know. Well, what we were missing without having Strange Matter.
Slack.
I don't want to say slack. I mean, we're talking about other bands. So.
Yeah, I don't necessarily think that. The hole hasn't been filled. I feel like it's a place in the hearts of Richmonders is the hole that's not been filled, as opposed to the actual like venue itself.
Sure.
One thing I love: No Dogs in Space. If you guys ever listen to that podcast, it's the. It's the last podcast on Left People. They do music history. Their replacements episode, they had a great little bit talking about the Milwaukee scene and how that came up, how they basically made a trifecta, which I'd love to do with Richmond, is where they had a local record shop, a local record producer, and a local venue, and all three of these places would all agree to record local bands, release and sell the local bands, then host them, basically. But the one thing is that venue, how do you get free hot dogs to everyone every night? That don't make sense. I feel like that's what made that venue, that scene, is the free hot dogs. But you guys also played the first show back at Lucy Lane with 10-Pound Snail and Blunt. So how was that?
Oh, that couldn't have gone better. That was
Coming home.
Yeah, that was our brainchild, just being like, okay, who are two bands that we want to play with like a lot, and like, you know, 10-Pound Snail is great and Blunt is great. Great guys, friends of ours, and they rocked the house.
They were incredible.
Yeah, like where would be the place that we would want to choose? And obviously Lucy Lane, they were out of commission because obviously COVID, they wanted to be safe, and they really planned their comeback carefully. And I ran into Andrew at a Fuzzy Cactus show, and he was just like, man, I want to play shows again. I'm like, well, it just so happens we're releasing a record, and we were actually going to hit you guys up about seeing if you wanted to have a one-off album release show. And they were like, absolutely, we made it work. And it went off without a hitch. It was just, they're so professional, especially, house shows can be a little sporadic and, not everything's completely set up. But they completely redid the lights. They had better sound engineering. And they were just so gracious. And it went so well. We packed the house. We sold a lot of merch. You know, it just couldn't have gone better. It was a wonderful experience.
So are they officially back now, or is it more they're still kind of getting their feet back?
I don't know if they've done another show yet.
I think the plan was they were going to do another show at the end of summer or maybe in September. I don't want to put words in their mouth again, but I know that they're trying to do more. I think they're slowly trying to come back. They're not, you know, I'm sure they're in high demand, but they still want to keep everyone safe. I remember that was the main 100%. Thing, so I don't know if they're doing shows every weekend again, but I think they're
from,
coming
from
back.
Where we were standing, it went off really well.
Yeah, definitely.
And they seemed to, everyone was, you know, having a good time, being respectful, and it's exactly what you always remembered at Lucy Lane.
It was
that show, man. It was great.
2.5 years they did not lose the magic, I'll say that.
Not at all.
Yeah. That's great to hear.
Yeah, it was amazing. Couldn't have gone better.
So since the last time we've talked, you have released live sessions, Live at Lakeside, also as well as the singles Dawn, Blue and Gold, and I wrote this originally, but you have now released upcoming release Return with Elephant Ear Studios, and you go ahead and went through that with Jeremy D. Simmons, right?
Yes. Yep.
Okay. Yeah. So do you want to talk a little bit about the album production you did on that? We talked a little bit about how you demoed it, and then, yeah.
Well, yeah, so basically we recorded the whole album all the way through ourselves in our practice space, just basically as pre-production for it, just that, because, you know, we like to do lots of overdubs and stuff, lots of fun little, you know, guitar and vocal harmonies. So yeah, we recorded the whole thing once over and then shopped around for a studio, and we met Jeremy. The vibe of both just the man himself and the Elephant Ears studio is just impeccable. It's like, yeah, this is where we want to record this. So we showed him the pre-production version and then just went to town.
Nice.
Yeah.
Do you guys still consider yourselves to be scrap rock? Is that still a genre you guys put out there?
You know, it's funny. I was specific. Like, that's it. It comes from like a band that I used to be in. And the first song I ever wrote was a song called Sherbet Scrapyard, and I think someone was making a joke that band was scrap rock. And I really thought that really represents the way I write, just taking the junk and scrap from every part of rock, and then putting into one, because I don't know if I would really describe us as indie or just prog, or just, we're very eclectic, so scrap rock seemed to be the best. And I was just on the edge of like thinking, I'm like, yeah, we should probably just call ourselves indie or something. And then the Broadberry actually made a video of the weirdest genres they've seen. They made like a little funny video, and they had themselves like, yeah, we saw scrap rock as one of the genres of the bands that we've had.
Ooh,
and they play with some mops behind a dumpster, and I thought that I wasn't expecting
fantastic.
I ran across that video and it had our song on it. I laughed really hard. I'm like, you know what? I'm keeping it.
Yeah,
it's
so good.
Like, it's better to be different and weird than just be like, you know, the same and just, you know, sometimes that can help you. So I like that. I like that genre. I'm going to keep it.
Yeah, I'm glad you guys are sticking with it there.
Yeah.
In some ways, we end up being like, we're basically 90s alternative from 21st century.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's kind of what we end up, but I like it.
But we really can't pick a
it's tough to know
a genre that. Sometimes like it's really out there sometimes, so yeah, I think scrap rock works.
No,
better.
I think scrap rock's great. I'm glad you guys are sticking with that. And also, I've seen you guys did the continuation of what I've called the half-cast hand. Is there what's your draw to that? Is there a specific inspiration behind that, or any meaning, or do you just guys kind of like it?
Well, we have it, so
Jason just has a friend who draws hands real good.
Yeah.
Okay. I know. Knew one of those friends in high school.
And we have a few friends. Yeah.
Leah. Oh God, I'm gonna mess up her last name, so forgive me, Leah. Leah Pierce-Raley. She had some artwork in her house. She was just doing free artwork for bands, and she's like, "I'll draw anything you want." And I'm like, "No, I know that like painting in your room. I want that one." And she's like, "That one? Like that? I don't even use that." I'm like, "That's the one I want." She's like, okay, she gave it to me, and the rest is history. And people love that. Like, we made shirts, we sell out of them all the time. It's the cover of our first album, you know, You're the Fox. I don't know why I was drawn to it. It just worked. I just saw it, and it worked. And
she's a great artist.
She's a great artist, yeah. And then for this new record, Nathan Tiersteg, we had a vision. Like, I had the vision of the hand walking across the desert with a shell on its back.
That's really cool.
And he made that work. He was great to work with. He did all the album artwork inside and out. And I think the theme is cool. I like it. You know, I think it just works for us. It's, you know, having an insignia, I think, would work for a lot of bands. So I'm happy we have that.
So, what's the plan with touring? Have you guys gone touring at all? I don't know where we left off with that in the last conversation.
Well, right now, it's extremely expensive to tour. Yes. I mean, gas prices and lodging. Yeah. And it's just, bands bigger than us aren't doing it.
Yeah.
And I think while we really, really, really want to do it, I think it doesn't make a lot of sense if you're not getting a good return, no pun intended, on investment. And right now, I just don't think the cards are in favor. We do have plans to tour next year. We're in the process. We're changing our strategy of how to do it so it is worthwhile. It may be a little little off-brand. We might just spend a lot of time in a certain state or city and do a lot of it. So just to save money on traveling.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
But I think we're good for it next year. But I think for this year, I think we just need to promote and do other things to make sure that we can justify doing it.
We just have some other goals that are kind of keeping us from, you know, trying to build up a certain amount of money to pay for equipment. There's a long list, but we're just working towards, you know.
And all the other stuff is going quite well, so.
Yeah, it's a trade-off for sure, but at the same time, we'll just be that much more ready. Yeah.
And I think the whole goal in our minds is like, don't do it just to say that you did it. Like, we do it for a purpose, do it for a cause, do it so it benefits you. And even though, you know, we love music more than anything, we're all trying to slowly do this for full time. Like, I'm already kind of there. I do lessons for a living, and you know, we have a cover band, and we're doing this more and more full time. So we're trying to all get that put together so we can do it full time. But even so, just doing it because we went on tour and we lost all of our money would not make much sense. So we're just trying to make sure it's
paying dues is important, exposure is important. Absolutely. But it isn't putting gas in the tank. Exposure itself. But no, I mean, it's something you have to do, and I respect the bands that are able to like make do and just, you know, power through it. It's really impressive and inspiring. So
So I know you all have kind of answered this throughout this evening, but just for the sake of following up, we still have general manager of men's clothing for Alex.
That's correct.
Yes. And you, sir?
Line cook.
Are a line cook, Ryan. Yeah. And you said you actually are teaching lessons now because you gave us a miscellaneous response last time.
Yeah, I said miscellaneous.
You gave us a very roundabout answer, and I answered for you miscellaneous.
Oh, that's cool. All right. What was I doing?
You were still at trolley, I think.
I was still at fucking trolley. I was working at a bodega last
job
time.
You didn't enjoy, I understand.
Yeah, it was, you know, it's actually where I wrote a lot of the songs for this album. Mm-hmm. So now I can feel a lot more comfortable saying that because I'm out of that situation.
Yeah,
but yeah, I was a line cook for a while, a dishwasher, and did the whole kitchen work thing, but now I can finally say that I am doing music full time.
Nice.
I teach at locations, and I, you know, just teach children and adults how to play guitar and other instruments, and that's basically what I, and I get to do this. Like, that's, those are the two things
that's
I do.
Great.
I play music and teach.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask, if you do like private lessons or if you actually work through an organization.
I do work through organizations, but some of them have a non-compete, so I just work at one organization and only that one organization.
Yes.
And I don't do private lessons and don't work at anywhere else. So that's what I will say.
Sounds good. So yeah, what sucks for Half-Cast? What can we expect if we do a follow-up episode after this? What are we going to be pestering you about then? What are we trying to do? Because we know we do have a cover band, which you guys are kind of, you know, part of, if I should say. Mm-hmm. You guys are part of a cover band as well.
Yeah, we started actually an LLC, which encompasses this band and that other band, and that's kind of part of the goals we were talking about
great,
earlier.
Yeah.
But it's something that's new, but it's picking up pretty quickly, and we're really excited about it. Doing like, you know, corporate events, weddings, bars, and anywhere that'll have us really that wants to hear us. So yeah, we've had a really good run so far. We have some really good members, Graydon, Raina, and Zach. We were really lucky to find them. But,
very.
Yeah. What say you, Ryan?
Oh, I'm very happy with, like, just like you were saying, the amount of talent we were able to find for that band. I don't know. It's just, it's very rewarding when you find people of a certain caliber and they want to play with you know that always feels good.
And to answer your question, like, what's next for Half-Cast, I think the three things on our list is making this wedding band / event band work, because that's really what it's for, weddings and events.
Exactly.
It's called the Party Favors. It was collaborating with other musicians, because now that we're so comfortable with ourselves, it's like doing things with other musicians, and we've done that with gigs, but now maybe doing it with music would be really great. Second of all, obviously more releases. It was 4 years since the Year of the Fox, or I guess technically six years.
Yeah. It's hard to
forget. Big release. Yeah. I mean, we did some live things in the meantime, but, you know, we'd like to get better at releasing new songs. So I think we're going to do EPs, like three EPs, like that'd in a row, and then maybe combine them at the end. We'll see. Vinyls, like trying to get vinyls out, and I think that's like on the and also touring. Those would be the things on the list. So expect to be seeing a lot more of us now that we have our shit together.
What kind of songs do you guys usually cover with the other band?
Everything. Yeah, we have a pretty extensive set list.
Yeah,
everything from 80s to modern R&B to the
old. You literally have to be a wedding band.
Literally,
You know anything off the charts. I'm sorry for interrupting.
No, it's fine. I'll say we have two singers with different ranges, so it makes it a little more eclectic and dynamic.
Yeah,
we're able to do everything from like Beyonce to, Rick James to you name it.
It's like Jet,
Tom Petty. Yeah. It's just like anything. Basically, the way that we're going about it is, the way we're marketing ourselves is like, if you want us to play it, we're gonna play it. That's like, well, that's just, we're gonna learn it. We're capable musicians. I mean, I went to college for it. Yep. These guys are incredible musicians. Yep. They have insane ears. So it's like, we're all good for it.
It's also making us all tighter in a lot of ways.
Oh, yeah.
Dance learning music does that too.
We come back because it's the three of us still as the core of the other band plus the other members, and then we come back to this band, and it's been really cool to see. So it's like, it's paying off in other ways we didn't expect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like towards the beginning of the cover band, we're like, oh man, we don't have time to rehearse half-cast stuff. We got so a gig coming up. And then we'd run the set real quick, the practice before a show. It's like, oh no, we still got it, because it's like, yeah, we haven't been playing this material, but we've been having to lock in together on funk tunes.
Yeah.
So it's like, okay, no, we still remember how to do this. Yeah.
Yeah, that's the one great thing about learning any type of music. My music teacher taught me as well. Yeah. And you also remind me a bit of him, Jason, just the kind of person you are. You remind me a bit of my music teacher, saying. And just the way that he told me you should be open to learning any type of music, because once you come back to your original stuff, especially with you guys being scrap rock, as you describe yourselves, combining genres and music, that'll make you not only better musicians, but also, open your mind to different ways to expand musically as well. So I think
that's
really
very well put.
It's smart of him to say that. That's exactly like my ethos as well. Just the more couldn't hurt you.
And also, you get paid to play at these places, and it can help, like what we're doing. It can help fuel your other passion. Like if you have if you have an original project, and you're not making as much money with it to kind of support it, or if you are and you're breaking even, you're doing okay. If you have time, why not do a separate band that's gonna only make enough money to propel that band on tour and things like that? Get vinyls, more merch. It's kind of an all-in-one thing.
It feeds itself.
We're still learning. We're still figuring it out.
Definitely.
Is there any artist or song you guys refuse to learn or play, or maybe not learn, but
we've already said it multiple times and we've learned it. at this point, what do we got?
Well, you said something.
What's our last stand?
You said one of you said, what is it? Sally? What is it?
Mustang Sally?
Is that the one? I don't know. I don't even think I even know that song.
I don't even recognize that song.
Exactly. Right? But like, apparently that's like the wedding song.
You're better off, man.
Okay.
Better off.
I don't know. I've kind of been surprised at how much fun I'm having playing songs that I hate, honestly.
Yeah. This is interesting.
Yeah. No, it's like, I can't stand a lot of a lot of kind of 80s corporate rock, Don't Stop Believing or Living on a Prayer. I'm like, man, this is a killer bass line though.
Yeah. Yeah, you get a great appreciation for these songs. Not even if they're overplayed or you don't like them, but I don't know if I am the type of person who would actively seek out Lizzo or anything like that. But then I'm learning these songs. I'm like, this is a great artist. These are great songs.
Yeah.
These are great
kind of fantastic.
And I'm getting out of that 14-year-old mindset of it's pop, so therefore it is sellouts. It's like, no, these are actually well-constructed songs, regardless of who wrote them or what they mean in public society. And I'm happy to be able to get the chance to play them and put my own twist on them and how they influence my own writing.
Right.
Yeah.
So there's that.
That's the next thing we're really excited to see as far as an effect of the wedding band and playing covers. As we start writing again for this EP, we already have three things in the work, three songs pretty much ready for it. But as we start writing, we'll just keep getting tighter, and it might actually help us write better because we kind of just know where to be.
Well,
if that makes sense. We've heard so many of the classics. It's just, this is how you do it.
Well,
but then, of course, do the half-cast thing.
And then we screw it all up.
Exactly.
appreciate you guys being on once again. Do you guys have any parting words? Or
Check out our new album, Return. It's anywhere you can get music. We worked really hard on it. Shout out to Jeremy D. Simmons at Elephant Ear Recording Studio. Best experience of our lives. Highly recommend the place. Shout out to Hourglass Sessions for having us for the Blue and Gold live version. Happy to be in Richmond and still doing this, three and a half years later. So, extremely thankful to have, and thank you, Cole, for
This.
It's awesome that you're still doing this.
No, I appreciate you guys coming back on, and thank you for dealing with me earlier. I know it was a pain, but what else? Oh, yeah, hope you guys will, be on for a third sometime around.
Yeah.
Looking forward to it and seeing you guys around.
You'll have to come to Hollywood, because that's what we'll be at that.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, you're going to have to come to L.A.
L.A.
You knew it was mine. my bread. You sip from my wine. You sat at my table and took what was mine.